You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
We are presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code DAN for a special offer when you sign up. That's code DAN, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
Yo-da-da, yeah. Yo-da-da.
That was impressive by you, Tony.
I also had Brujeria when we were talking about those two.
Those are two Miami classic songs.
Brujeria.
Yeah, I put that one on back-to-back. And just
banger.
Everyone's dancing.
Absolute banger.
You want to get people dancing at the Flannies Westchester with touch tunes.
I'm going on vacation.
Yeah, I saw that.
For a long time.
Yeah, I saw that.
And
didn't you just have your honeymoon?
Yes, I did, actually, funny enough.
He brought COVID back.
Yeah, I was
original. You were patient.
Patient zero.
Wait, so you're telling me you are right now in the day before vacation?
Yeah.
It's a top day.
It is a
great day. We're ranking just days. The day before vacation, like, how are you feeling right now? Like,
I'm feeling good. No, I'm feeling good. And this was my question to pose to all of you guys.
Posing it.
The day before the vacation, you got a lot of things to do.
Yeah.
Right? You got to pack. You got to go here. Your wife's
gone for a month?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got a lot to pack.
You got a lot to pack, right?
Hawaii. Is this a Thailand?
Going to Hawaii.
Hawaii?
Yeah.
Hawaii is very nice.
It is.
Yeah,
second time I'm going.
But how long are you gone?
2 weeks. 16 days.
That's 16 days is not 2 weeks.
What's the travel, you know?
Yeah.
To get there, come back. It's a 12-hour trip. Put those two together, it's a whole day.
You're glowing, man.
Doing all the islands?
I'm doing Oahu, and I'm doing Maui. Week in each.
You're doing Oahu?
Yeah.
Why?
Why not?
Because. It's a touristy one.
Mike's dropping his bona fides.
Yeah. I mean, look. Oahu's a really nice place. North Shore is great. We're going to do things off the beaten path. Renting a Jeep, dropping the top. Cruising around.
Jurassic Park land?
Jurassic Park for sure, doing zip lining there.
So you're going to Kauai?
Not going to Kauai.
Then that's not Jurassic Park land.
Well, there's the valley, Kualoa Valley, which is where they filmed Jurassic Park.
Yeah, doing Road to Hana.
You guys are having a Hawaii off right now. You guys are both flexing like you're both.
We're going to do the entire Road to Hana.
How many times you done Road to Hana?
Once.
Yeah?
I'm going to do it again.
Yeah?
In a Jeep, dropping the top.
You're doing it yourself?
Me and my wife.
They've both taken their shirts off.
You have a driver?
No driver. Just me.
No driver?
Yeah.
We're going to miss
your crew.
I told you, off the beaten path. We're going to go to some waterfalls. We're going to go to some mountains. We're going to go to some beaches, secluded. You
can't go off the path. The whole ride is the path.
Well, you know what I mean. Going off the beaten path.
Road to Hana was one of my favorite things I've ever done.
It's incredible.
I've only done it once.
Did you do the sunrise at the Halakalea?
Yes. Just go ahead and ask me if you want to say, like, hey, did you do anything? Yes.
Did you do the...
Yes.
How about the...
Yes.
Is there a Hawaii podcast out there? Because you too.
I mean, we dominate. Yeah. It would only be one episode, though.
Beach? You're a red sand beach?
I'm more of a black sand beach guy.
I mean, you don't have to pick one.
I mean, I like the black sand beach.
Welcome to Mystery Creek.
Oh! Hey!
I did that right.
Yeah,
under the breath, though.
Oh, dear.
What's the name of that little... The hill, the mountain that you can climb up. It's got a cool trail. It's in Oahu.
Oh, Diamond Head.
Diamond Head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
gotta wear... Been there, done that.
Yeah, you gotta wear the right shoes for that.
Yeah,
I'm a
went there wearing these slides.
Slides is a no-go.
Yeah.
Absolute no-go.
See, that's what you're coming for, Mystery Crate. That's why you come here.
Yeah.
For footwear advice when you're climbing Diamond Head. That's what this episode is.
Yes. Literally the entire thing.
It's just Tony and I being insufferable about saying we've been to Hawaii.
Yeah.
First world problems should be the podcast.
You going to the Big Island?
No Big Island, no.
No Big Island?
No Big Island.
Have you ever been to the Big Island?
I haven't.
Whoa, dude. The second time you're going to Hawaii, you're not doing Big Island?
Because it's my wife's first time. So I want to take her to the spots that I was there.
You got to do Big Island. You got to do Big Island.
It's tough because there's not many people that live there, right? It's basically inhabited.
You go to Kona.
Yeah, but
you got Kona, and you can drive around the entire Big Island. It's only big relative to all the other islands.
Correct.
And they got that summit over there. You'll see God, man.
It. Well, I can do that in Maui.
No.
Yeah.
This is the highest summit in the Big Island. And Big Island's got like a very great vibe.
Sounds like you went to all the islands.
Yeah. Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
I did.
Damn it! So much better than my trip.
So what do we got coming up today?
I don't know, man.
This is a biggie we got today. Howard Bryant running
hamstrings.
Why don't you ask the question?
What?
What we got today?
I know. I'm doing a thing, Roy. I'm doing a thing.
Well, Mystery Crate.
It's Mystery Crate.
It's a mystery sometimes. And last week, it was a bonus episode of Cinephobe. Mm-hmm. And this week, Howard Bryant, who you may not know, is just an insane Marvel fan.
Yeah.
Loves Marvel. His friends over at the Marvel Cinematic University podcast are teaming up here. If you can subscribe, we'll put the link in the bio for this episode. But Howard joins that podcast a lot, and they talk about everything that's happening in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, naturally with a name like that.
Yeah.
And a pretty big Marvel franchise just had a sequel drop last week. And if you haven't seen it,
spoiler alert.
You're fucked.
Yeah.
You're fucked for this episode, man.
But we'll be back at the end. So you just want to hear us.
So I have been very busy with the local sports Equinox.
Yeah.
And I edited this episode in part.
I'm so sorry.
They also helped me out a great deal, but I gave it a run through. And I still hadn't gotten around to seeing Doctor Strange because I'm always traveling all these games.
Yeah.
So it sounds like an incredible movie. I couldn't believe some of the surprises Marvel
had. Seems like it was an enjoyable listen, even if you haven't seen it. If you're not worried about spoilers and you haven't seen it, it's still a good listen.
I will say, it made me want to see the movie more.
Yeah.
And sometimes spoilers work like that with me.
Yeah.
No, Endgame, no spoilers headed into it.
No.
But I kind of... This is a spoiler.
Here it comes. Spoiler.
There's a big spoiler right now. Yeah. There's a big spoiler big right one. Now. I will fast forward 30 seconds twice.
Yep.
Just because there's a big spoiler right now.
So if it's 15 seconds, go four times.
Yep. Here it is.
Good math.
I knew that Patrick Stewart was going to be in this movie as Professor Xavier.
How?
Because that was like the internet chatter. Just like the internet chatter before. All right, you're going to want to fast forward. Before the latest Spider-Man movie was that all the Spider-Men would come together.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But I knew that about this movie. And you know what it did? Made me want to see it more.
Mm.
But I had no idea the surprises this film had in store. Hmm. Apparently, that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a
love
good
a
tease.
Love a tip of the iceberg.
So these guys will break it down for you in ways you had always dreamed of, especially if you've seen the film. This is a good companion pod. And if you're one of those people that just wants to keep abreast of the Marvel Cinematic Universe and maybe not actually watch the film, just get downloaded on the deets, or you're like me, someone that hadn't seen it, doesn't mind spoilers, and it just makes you want to see it more, this is a good episode.
Yeah.
Multiverse of Madness, is that what it's
called? Something like
Chair
that.
Bear,
yeah,
is
yeah,
that what some, it's called?
Some,
you
sure.
see it?
Yeah,
I guess. Have you seen the Doctor Strange?
He said sure. I don't think he's
Why not, Chair Bear?
Why not?
Have you ever been to Hawaii?
Yeah, come on.
Have you ever been to Hawaii?
Chair Bear, ladies and gentlemen.
A little quicker.
Hey, welcome.
Hey, how you doing?
Have you ever been to Hawaii?
I feel like I've been to Hawaii now.
Yeah. Okay.
That's thanks to you guys.
Not the same, though.
Chair Bear, everybody.
Yeah. Good job, Chair
Bear. Yeah. Nice seeing you.
Enjoy
nice
Howard.
See you later.
I'm here with Anthony Canton III, Jerome Cheng, and Jake Christie, the mighty trio that formed the MC University podcast. To my mind, the best podcast out there on the MCU and fantasy in general. You can catch them weekly on Apple, Spotify, Google Play, SoundCloud, or wherever you get your podcasts. When I'm taking a break from politics and Meadowlarkas, you can find me over there making fun of Sam Wilson. But today they're here, part of the Mystery Crate. Welcome, guys. And we're going to jump in head first into the latest MCU blockbuster, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. Guys, I've been waiting a long time for this, ever since the end of WandaVision, but really ever since Mordo said no more sorcerers 6 years ago in the first Doctor Strange. There's so much to discuss here. Sam Raimi, Secret Wars momentum, the multiverse, and here it is. 2 hours, 6 minutes, Stephen Strange, Wanda Maximoff, $200 million budget. So let's do a quick whip around. We'll start with you, Jake. What was the one thing you were anticipating most in this film, and did it deliver?
So the thing I was anticipating and I would say worried about was will the Marvel machine allow Sam Raimi to make a Sam Raimi movie? Because even though I love the MCU movies, they can kind of sometimes dull their directors and kind of take away what makes them original. And this is kind of the first time they got like a genre master to make one of their movies. And I can say that without a doubt, this movie is a movie that only Sam Raimi could make. And so on that front, I was as happy as could be. I think I fully delivered that.
AC?
Well, for me personally, as somebody who's been a multiverse proponent and seeing He Who Remains and Loki talk about a multiversal war that spans the eons, for me, when you talk about Multiverse of Madness, I want to see Secret Wars. That's what I'm ready for. It doesn't matter if it's the modern version.
We're getting there.
No, we're getting there. We're getting there for sure. But I think the breadcrumbs that the MCU has slowly left for us as we've gone on in phase four, this movie brings it a little bit more into focus. And more so than anything else, from a comic book standpoint, the idea that you get verbiage like incursions and stuff like that puts that Secret Wars thing into more focus for me. So we got that and a lot of other things, but I was very pleased.
Trump?
You can tell that these guys and I have done the podcast together for so long that they covered my first two expectations. But coming out of that, I think the exciting part for me, and they teased it just as much in there, not even that cleverly, it's just I wanted maximum Maximoff. And I wanted to see how far Wanda is going to go, how powerful she really is. I think so often we have gotten teases of it from as early as Ultron, the potential that she could have. And boy, did it deliver. We will definitely talk about it in detail later, but boy, did it deliver. How about you, Howard?
Yeah, I kind of thought, Jake, I would say that Taika Waititi doesn't. I don't think he would be a genre director. I think he got to cut loose a little bit, and
I guess what I'm trying to say is a director with a very distinct visual genre style. I think because even if you look at Taika, his biggest budget movie was maybe $2 million before this. I feel like a lot of times I kind of was just really disappointed with what Eternals was with Chloe Zhao. So I was kind of nervous. Yep. That, like, are they hiring Sam Raimi, one of the godfathers of modern genre cinema, to do a paint by numbers? And if they did that, that would have been really sad. And I'm very glad they didn't.
I just feel it's a conversation that becomes a deep dive in itself. But I think there are directors that can do their thing in MCU, but they do need to do a good MCU thing. And I think Sam Raimi is one of those perfect fits for that situation.
Yeah, and let the record show that despite all the grief that Sony movies get, when Spider-Man 2 came out, people were saying that was the greatest comic book movie of all time.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it was because of the director. And You've Got a Train to Catch still sticks with me. I think for me, it was Mordo, I got to say, because the way that Easter egg ended Doctor Strange. Oh, and by the way, how are your legs doing, Benjamin Bratt? I mean, that set up that we were finally going to get a showdown between a true believer, which is the Mordo character in Doctor Strange, who was so disillusioned that he was going to come back and try to set things right. And we got something way different from that character. And that storyline disappeared. And I understand sort of why. I get that. A lot has changed in those 6 years, that they've gone bigger and bigger and bigger, and these movies are so apocalyptic. And so how are you going to have a mano-a-mano now when you've moved into every movie is completely dystopian? But that was the fight I was looking for. That was the character development I was looking for. I also thought, too, and maybe this is a trend, and I'm interested in your thoughts about what you were expecting coming into this film, but there's also been a trend lately, and I saw it most recently with Licorice Pizza, where the trailer is not the movie. And I really, really thought that this was going to be a movie where you saw Stephen Strange out of his depth, really sort of overtaken by his own power and by his own sort of greed and sins and such. And he was actually a pretty fairly solid superhero in this movie.
Well, that's a really good point there. I think in the context of MCU, It's like almost the chicken and egg. Which came first? Was it us dissecting every little thing that happens in a Disney Plus series or in a trailer or in any kind of set photo that we have to figure out everything and remove the surprise of film that forces them to full on mislead and lie to us in trailers? Or is that something that, like, you know, that they just want to keep for the sake of being a bit of a low-key trickster in that regard? Because I can speak on behalf of, or I think I can, you tell me, AC. AC is our resident Easter egg hunter. Mm-hmm. And a trailer like this is fodder for the opportunity to figure out all the things that were going on. And then again, as he preached, multiverse, multiverse, multiverse. He's been talking about it since, I don't even remember there ever being a single universe, the way AC talks about it. My guy, like, how did the trailer come off for you versus like what the movie turned into?
Well, I think the main thing, as far as the trailer was concerned, it was more of a, we're trying to sell Stephen Strange going to Wanda Maximoff for help, even though the odds are with it, when you consider the ending of WandaVision, that she was going to be looking for the kids. She was reading the Darkhold, and that was going to become an instant issue for all of these characters in this movie, as it did. Now, from a multiverse perspective, yes, when you get He Who Remains talk about this war, and you want to see how everything continues to build and continues to build and escalate. And I wouldn't even say that it was necessary as much of an escalation as far as an introduction to what the multiverse looks like with some of the characters that we saw in this movie, and mainly the abilities of the variants of not only Strange, but also Wanda as well, and some other characters that we'll talk about in a little bit. So I think from a scale standpoint, yeah, I probably expected a little bit more than what we got here, but I will definitely say I was not disappointed. I think they did, from a thematic standpoint, for Strange's character, I think it was very well done, and I think it helped kind of advance not only his story, but the multiversal story as well.
I also want to say that I think in a lot of cases with people like us who talk about it a lot and think about it a lot, it's easy for us to kind of invent in our head that some storylines are further along than they are, because in the actual reality of what has come out with the MCU, the only real characters we see from other universes is in Spider-Man No Way Home, when it's characters from established universes. So in reality, we actually haven't been to other universes and seen how the multiverse works. And so from that perspective, while I think it would have been fun if there were some more multiverse hopping and if he was in like 10 universes or whatever, I think that making it very simple of like, we're going to give you three different versions of this Doctor Strange, and this is, we're going to explain to you how it works from scratch, how different universes work. And I also think that allows them to set up things like incursions much easier, because when we're only paying attention to three different universes, that makes things a lot more grounded when it's trying to comprehend the actual multiverse, because that obviously is both in storytelling and in real life impossible to comprehend. So I was surprised, but I think that for what the film was trying to achieve, I think they made the right decision in keeping the relative number of universes small.
Yeah, I agree. And I sort of thought that, I think for me, what I was looking for, and once again, the film takes you on whatever direction it wants to take you on. You've got to decide if you're going on the journey. And to me, I think I was expecting two things. I was expecting way more emotional wrestling with the Stephen Strange character in terms of his power. Because he is Tony Stark. They are alter egos in a lot of ways in terms of really overdoing it in terms of making a mess out of powers they can't control. And I thought we were going to get that. And I also thought we were going to get, by the way that she had discussed and talked about herself, that we were going to get a Wanda Maximoff that thought she was on the run. And instead, she just went on the offensive. She just went on the offensive and said, "Hey, come get me if you think you can." And I thought that was a fantastic turn by her, and especially because the question that the MCU has been asking, well, that I've been asking of the MCU, And especially now that you're adding the Disney Plus series in there, is how much homework do you actually have to do? And for those of you who would like to do your homework, Secret Wars was a massive, massive tie-in in 1984 and 85 in the comic book. So hop on the Marvel app and go look at the massive Secret Wars and Secret Wars 2 and Secret Wars 3.
Yes, yes. And you could also add the 2015 version of Secret Wars, New Avengers, the Hickman run, those things basically tied into this movie when we talk about the incursions and what that means going forward.
How's the balance, do you think, that these movies, now that we're into the mid-20s of this, the number of these Marvel films, the question had been earlier that you could enjoy these films because you didn't have to do a lot of homework. You could walk right in. But this absolutely struck me as you had to know, especially when we're talking about the story arc of Wanda Maximoff and her grief, you had to have watched WandaVision for this to make the most amount of sense.
I mean, I think that WandaVision was the one thing you did need to watch, which is, you know, can be an issue for some people, and I understand if that's too big of a bridge. I honestly almost wish that, like, they just were explicit about it, because I think a lot of people are like, I think people get overwhelmed by the idea that they have to watch everything. But I think if you told someone, like, hey, remember that show WandaVision that a lot of people liked? Just watch it over the weekend and you'll be fine for Doctor Strange. Like, if people knew exactly what it was, I think it would be less overwhelming.
Yeah, I think on top of that, it's the other thing, too. Like, when I think about, you know, Infinity War and Endgame was that tentpole event that, like, we suddenly have a whole bunch more Marvel viewers because, everyone knew, like, this was the thing to watch in theaters. And what ultimately happened is you got people who were like, do I need to see everything? And people would see that. And then people would be like, what is the minimum amount of movies I need to understand what's going on? Some people were looking to a YouTube video for a 30-minute breakdown of everything that was going on. And I think what ultimately will happen, and that's why it kind of works out for these Disney Plus series to go, is hopefully there is enough in movies that you can kind of like pick up pieces without having like a fully necessarily like the full experience of it. And it probably is like the back and forth where it's like either you're watching it to understand the movie ahead or you watch the movie and it drives you back to watch to make more sense of what you just saw. And I think that's just like where we're at now.
And no matter what else we got Wong. And we got a lot of Wong. Yes. And that felt great.
I love Wong. I said it before.
Shout out to Wong.
Benedict Wong's weight loss, shouts to him too. We got to shout it out. In the 5 years when there's the blip, Wong hit the gym and you got to respect it.
Agent Coulson died so Wong could live and babysit the entire MCU.
100%. Yes. And you know what else about Wong? Another thing, it's not the film's fault. It's simply me deciding what I thought I was going to get.
Yeah,
I actually thought that we were going to get a very moralistic Wong explaining to Strange that he had, because in the first Doctor Strange, he was trying to, you can't break all these different rules.
Can I explain why I think that didn't happen though? Because I think that we've seen Strange actually screw up more on film than be good. And I think in order for the turn of him doing too much, especially because the last thing we saw was him in No Way Home almost breaking the multiverse to help a kid, I actually think that at a certain point, at least
also
I would
very Stark-like.
Yes, I would roll my eyes where it's like, are we, so everyone trusts this guy as if he's a hero, but we only see him screw up. And so I think that there might be a thought of, if Doctor Strange is going to be one of our tentpole characters in the next phase, he needs to prove his value as a good before we can do the stories of him overreaching. Also, because we already have done the stories of him overreaching.
And I am reaching out right now. If you are out there, I'm sending a signal out to you, CC Sabathia. You know how I feel about Tony Stark. I need to know how you feel about Stephen Strange. There will be text messages. There will be. And CC is a friend of the MCU. Huge diehard, and just as a quick aside, he sent me a text message the other day that said Moon Knight with a trash can emoji.
Oh wow.
Well, that's to be discussed at a later date. Just
to be discussed
FYI.
At a later date.
Just
back to like Wong and Strange, and just like Strange more or less letting it fly. He's just like this supremely talented. When he shows up, you're going to get a lot of loose cannon, but at the same time, he more or less will like get you, one would hope, to the promised land, although maybe not in the cleanest way. I mean, we're looking at a Phil Jackson, Dennis Rodman situation, in my opinion. If you're going to three-peat, if you're going to carry this to the very end and like get yourself that like last dance, sometimes you're going to gotta let that cape fly. That's the way I see it.
Yeah. And I think one of the most interesting things about his character in this movie, and I do like the mirror imagery when we look into the variants and see that basically they all make a form of the same choice that gets them to a place where they either get corrupted or catastrophe happens. And Strange gets to see that and gets to make a different choice, but yet still his own nature, even in doing the right thing, gets him to a place where even he gets corrupted once again. So that part of it was very fascinating to see.
Yeah. How do we feel about one of the things that I had heard going into the film was that the movie was very, very true to its comic roots and getting closer and closer. And when we got done with Endgame, moving into Eternals, we, on your program, we had talked about the necessity of telling smaller stories. And this was a big story, and it was also a small story at the same time. Mm-hmm. Because you've got the apocalyptic, obviously, from the opening jump, you've got the dreamscape and dream walking and the rest of it. And then you also have this individual character that is the Elizabeth Olsen character, that is Wanda Maximoff. Her journey has not been complete on screen. And finally, we get to a point now where there's an examination of that. I want to hold on to that piece for one quick second. And I want to go one other place to close up. I know it was in some ways by accident, but also an incredible amount of great fortune that Robert Downey Jr., that the Tony Stark character was the tentpole. Do you see that in Benedict Cumberbatch? Do you see that in the Strange character? Can he carry this phase the way that the Tony Stark character did?
I think the biggest part of that is his want to. And it's pretty clear in all of Benedict's interviews that he goes, I'm not done with this character. I feel like this character has a lot of legs. I think there's a passion there that he's really enjoying diving into the meat of this character. And I think we saw that here. And kind of the way that they built him in this movie with everything going on around him, I think it would lead you to believe that he could be a leader, even though we discussed on our own program that my co-hosts don't exactly necessarily agree with that fact. But I would say I'm firmly in Strange. Go ahead. You can run this thing.
But I think that I think it's two different questions. I think the mm-hmm. question of whether or not the character of Doctor Strange can run things in the universe, that I don't know. I think the answer is he's going to try, but he can't. But does Benedict Cumberbatch have the charisma and the, you know, chutzpah to be the central focal point?
I think
if we're comparing him to Robert Downey Jr., the answer is no, but that's like saying that a baseball team's bad because they're not the 27 Yankees, you know?
High bar.
But I think, and I would have told you in 2016, I would have said absolutely not. Benedict, whatever, no. And after Infinity War, I would have said, probably not. And honestly, at this point, I really can't believe I'm saying it, but I think probably yes, he can.
The answer is yes. And you know, and it's funny, that was, and look at AC. I was going to say, this is a podcast, look at AC's face. Why is that face crinkling right now, AC? Do you feel like you've been betrayed on this podcast? Do you, Have your mates had a change of heart from the last time you talked about this?
No, I think it's great that Jake has a little bit more exuberance for this. This is awesome. Come to my
What we discussed previously was whether or not the character could lead, and I said no because he's irresponsible. But yes. To me, if an actor's charismatic enough to do a role, that's the main conversation I want to talk about. I talk about that this whole podcast if we wanted to.
Well, I actually want to pose a question back to you, Howard. On a character standpoint, I just don't want Doctor Strange to find his responsibility. Like, I don't want him to be the responsible father suddenly. Like, I don't need him to have a Tony Stark level turn.
Mr. Stark, you don't need him. Who's that? Your ward? But, you know, yeah. But are we having some nostalgia toward Tony Stark? He was completely irresponsible.
He was. No, but I just said, like,
irresponsible.
He still arrives, like, they still make it a point for him to arrive there. Like, by the time he gets to Infinity War, he is the essentially the old head who like that everyone looks to, right? And he's still like the mentor to Peter. I don't necessarily need Strange to do that. I don't need Strange to feel that level of guilt. I don't need him to do that. I don't need him to be magic Iron Man. The other thing I want to point out, ask you, because this is a thing that we've had a conversation a lot in our more recent episodes, is we are going in so many different directions and so many different worlds, so many different things. You're asking for a leader. Where's ground zero for us? Because now you're in a situation where, like, it's very easy to have a Captain America and Iron Man during like the Infinity Saga. We're so far beyond that. We have the Internals that, like, while obviously it's not the most popular film and not the most successful, but by all arguments, they were the ones that never intervened that might be like the most powerful and available.
That's right. Doors, absolutely, doors had opened. Doors opened there. And now when you watch Moon Knight, more doors have opened. I mean, you're dealing with incredibly powerful beings that keep it away from a street level. And I had always
powerful
thought,
but incompetent gods.
I love that. Powerful, incompetent god.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.
I think also to the point, to Jake's point about the Stephen Strange arc, let's not forget that Robert Downey Jr. had like 11 years with Tony Stark. I mean, I forget about Iron Man and Iron Man 2 and Iron Man 3 because, you know, he had a long time to do with that character what Benedict Cumberbatch has had 6 years to do. So there's a long way to go for him, no question.
Also, but, like, to that point of, like, we ask about, to your Benedict Cumberbatch question, can we insert Doctor Strange in any movie as a means to make it a draw the way we used to do it with Iron Man and Robert Downey Jr.? I don't think so necessarily. Maybe because of like the type of character. Yeah.
What the question that we're really asking is he a superstar on screen? Mm-hmm. That's what we're really asking.
Yeah.
And the beauty of these movies, of what the MCU has done, is by the time we get even to Civil War, you recognize that you had not one, to Jerome's point about this thing being in so many different directions. This was a Robert Downey Jr. vehicle, but who knew Chris Evans was a superstar? Mm-hmm. And then who knew that Chris Hemsworth was a superstar? And there is, and of course you had, you know, Nick Fury, and you had Samuel L. Jackson. So the fact of the matter is that it is going in a lot of directions. And we've talked about it on your pod, on the MCU pod, that the story, the phases are really wrestling between sort of Ditko Marvel, which is street level, and Kirby Marvel, which is Galactus Marvel. So you're going in these huge different directions. And I thought that this movie was really sort of tying the two together in some way.
Yeah.
And we'll see what they do with it. I actually felt like, and I'm not quite sure what the reason was. I'm going to throw out a hypothesis to you. I thought, I couldn't tell if the reason was because I was getting a little fatigued with these apocalyptic super battles, that how many more cosmic beams can I look at after seeing Infinity War and an Endgame?
But I think that a thing that this movie does that you're alluding to is that, with the exception of like some of the stuff around the mountain, it's a movie that's all magic and what have you, but almost every fight takes place in either a small space or a real space.
Yeah.
And I think that as much as I love like the painterly quality of the Avengers Assemble scene, it's actually, I think, really bad from a filmmaking perspective to have a gigantic battle in like a random field in upstate New York. Like, mm-hmm. it just looks bad. And I think that because of these battles that are with not tactile weapons like magic, if you have them in a tactile space, it always will feel more intimate and personal. You know what I mean? I think that's what helped combine the cosmicness with the street levelness, because there was cosmic themes, but each of the individual scenes functioned on a street level way in a lot of.
Well, Jake, you know, I mean, that is entirely why we talked about it just yesterday. Yeah. Shout out Sam Raimi. The man knows how to make an action set piece. The man knows how to set where you are when things are happening, because like we do.
He made two incredibly compelling horror movies, both in the same cabin, exactly. For like $2 million combined.
Exactly, because like even beyond all those things, like let's not forget the first big action set piece is in New York, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yes. Like in a New York that like we can see everything like moving around, we have a good sense of where we are. Even when it moves to other locations, we can feel that they've actually moved across to other parts. In that sense, I couldn't even tell you like how much is it. Just maybe a bit of a indictment on Marvel action in general and just feeling all the same in empty spaces, or just like a real credit to having Sam Raimi at the helm.
Yeah, and having small space fighting is hard to do when you've got the level of powers that those guys have. At some point, all the fight scenes end up looking the same when you're at that level of power. And the reason why some of the other fight scenes, I mean, obviously nothing will ever be as brutal as Civil War up in the, I mean, when Cap and Iron Man essentially tried to kill each other. I mean, that's the most brutal scene in the entire MCU to me.
Until we start talking about the most personal.
Exactly. Right.
On that front, for sure. Yeah.
Let's go one other place before we go where I really want to go. And that is the space where we end up in one of the pieces of the multiverse. And all of a sudden, for the comic book lovers out there and everyone who's been following the Sony Fox MCU thing, we get Black Bolt. Mm. We get Captain Carter. We get Captain Marvel, who is not the Captain Marvel that we remember. We get, but more than anybody else, who do we get? We get Charles Xavier. And I don't know how you guys felt about that scene, that council scene, but in the theater, when he rolled in, the place went wild.
Yep.
And the place went wild, I suspect, because they were thinking sooner or later, the X-Men are coming back to the MCU. What were your thoughts of that?
I would say the sound drop of the animated series, beautiful. The yellow hover chair, beautiful. Patrick Stewart looking a little old to play the role. It is what it is. That's fine. But all that said,
he's up there.
He's very up there, right? But I think to all those ends, it's just, you know, I don't think there is anything in here that tells me that this is the X-Men I'm going to see or how soon I'm going to see it. But I think it does do a really nice thing of introducing this can exist, which we know everything can exist. It's a multiverse. But also, like, I love, as someone who has followed like the early Marvel films and the animated shows and things like that, like, give me any kind of mini homage and I will eat it all the way up.
100%. I think when you think about Charles Xavier and Reed Richards, and by the way, you drop in a Baxter Foundation.
I didn't even mention Reed Richards.
Yeah.
How did Mr. Fantastic.
Howard, you're ignoring him like Pam from season one.
And my son was sitting next to me and he goes, Jim!
That is great. The funny part about like all of that is you get these Easter eggs with Strange mentioning the whole, oh, this thing happened in the 60s, which makes you wonder, in the 616, the Fantastic Four story, what that might look like with all four of them disappearing. But nonetheless, to bring it back here, getting Reed Richards in this, it was cool. I mean, if you think about Fantastic Four, we haven't seen, I mean, the films, they are what they are. But just the idea that they're going to be coming back at some point and getting that that visual was just tremendous. And I think the energy in the theater, in my theater specifically, kind of alluded to that. But the Xavier stuff, Black Bolt, Howard, you mentioned the comic book aspect for fans who want to eat this up. I think the way that the Illuminati were portrayed here was perfect to how they are in the comics, because you think about one of the issues where they all have Infinity Stones and they don't know what to do with them. They lose control of them and all that type of stuff. It's their arrogance and just the idea that they think, as Captain Marvel says, Maria Rambeau, she goes, "Oh, we'll handle your little witch." Well, I mean, we know what happened there. So I think just those visuals were just fantastic.
You might
want
to talk to your daughter about that.
Mm-hmm. But that was too fun. That was another thing. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I think that the thing that it did, which I think it's just so funny, too, that Anson Mount, who plays Black Bolt, that's the biggest W of anyone's film career. Because as far as any viewer would be concerned, he is considered as important as Patrick Stewart, John Krasinski, LaShawn Lynch, and Haley Atwell, who are all actual movie stars. But I think what it did is the audiences immediately knew that if those characters were to die, it had to be a big deal, even though those characters aren't actually a big deal in the universe. That, like, it did the homework for you, where you understood how big of a deal it is that Wanda is killing Mr. Fantastic, is killing Professor X, is killing Captain Marvel, but it didn't have to kill any actual characters that we know specifically. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a really fun cheat, and also like a very, you know, kind of fun middle finger to the audience of people who wanted like these characters to stick around. It's like, we'll give you them for a few seconds, and then we'll take them away too.
Yeah, and on top of that, it did make me laugh, I had to say. I was like, damn, Professor X, not too adept with the ladies. I mean, you got sent to ash already by Jean Grey in X3, and now Wanda Maximoff is just dusting you again, pal.
Snap your neck. Nothing says Dark Phoenix in a Marvel film like killing off Charles Xavier at some point. Like, it's incredible. And one of those things that, like, also always trying to think that you can contain a power. Like, how many, like, clearly these Xaviers have not taught, like, exchanged notes with each other, that they keep on making the same mistake.
No doubt. The one massive question for all of this, for this movie, in my opinion, did have to be the arc of Wanda Maximoff as a character. How do we conclude the Wanda Maximoff story? Or have we concluded the Wanda Maximoff story? The beauty of WandaVision to me, and I still believe that it is the best of the Disney streamers, to me, I still love WandaVision the best.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
It was also the deepest in terms of the theme of her grief, of where this grief has taken. They've done more with that character than maybe any of them. In terms of the emotional depth of the Elizabeth Olsen character, how do we feel about the story of Wanda Maximoff and how they concluded it here?
I think that I've been wrestling with that a lot, because there is an incongruity with the end of WandaVision and where she picks up here. Now, I think a lot of that can be explained with she's getting corrupted by the Darkhold, and it, you know, can make turn her desires into, like, her desire to have a family into something more evil. But what I've actually kind of come to is that I think the problem is that the end of WandaVision kind of gave her too much of a pass. And I think that this is kind of where she always was headed. And if she didn't have, like, that kind of what I feel forced forgiven ending at the end of WandaVision, I think it would have felt more natural. I obviously don't think that this is the end of her character, because you don't see her dead body, and therefore she's not dead.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Jake. I just don't see immediately what is the through line to, like, come along, we got to go defeat Galactus. Like, they're just not, there's not something there. Like, there was one thing when we had, like, say, the Hulk. Like, the Hulk was presented in Age of Ultron as, like, the loose cannon. We couldn't trust him. They send him off to, or he sends himself off to Sakaar. But even then, it was uncontrollable. Like, Wanda was well within her faculties in everything she decides to do here. And I just don't see, like, it's very brutal. Like, you mentioned, and I understand, like, how you meet it when it comes to Civil War, how brutal it is. She massacres the Illuminati.
Yes.
While on the way to try to kill some children. Like, there is just nothing that, like, comes off really well about it. So it'll be really interesting. In terms of, like, where I could see it go, there's, like, the one card that hasn't quite been played yet, and I don't think we've seen the last of them, and that's Vision.
I was just about to bring that up, too.
Yeah.
Redemption stories, specifically for this one, I'm sure it's going to be complicated. But then I think about the comics and House of M and Avengers Disassembled. They had Wanda kill Avengers in that. They had Wanda rewrite reality in that. And while Vision in the books was not happy with her and sent her away, eventually there will be an opportunity for redemption because everybody loves a good redemption story. So if they find a way to tell it, and I think that they can in a specific way, whether it be via TV
AC, are you telling me she's about to get the MVP narrative like situation right now? Is that what you're calling for?
100%. Because if you really think about it, she did put up a Nikola Jokic stat line in this movie. Like, if you really just think,
she was doing the real MVP.
She was the real MVP. She was doing a little bit of everything. So I think overall, people love Wanda Maximoff. People do. The fans really love her. And I love her too. She was awesome in this movie. I know a lot of people were upset. Like, in terms
of
just like...
Well, what you're reminding me of is one of my favorite TikTok sounds where it's just, I support women's rights, but more importantly, I support their wrongs.
Mm-hmm. That is great. That is great. But I look forward to seeing how they bring her back. And again, Elizabeth Olsen has alluded to it in interviews as well. She's not done playing this character by a long shot.
Elizabeth Olsen can act. And yes. and she did carry. She can carry scenes. And when she's on screen, we're watching her. And that goes back to what we were saying before about expecting this to be maybe a Tom Holland, Benedict Cumberbatch, you know, phase. She carries her own, and whatever they do with her, and she's also powerful. When we left the movie, my son says to me, we talked about it, he goes, and they killed my favorite character. And he was talking about Wanda. And I'm like, killed, son? Killed? I'm not sure about
you
that.
You haven't showed him enough movies. If you don't see a toe tag, it's a rule.
Exactly. Unless you see... I mean, you certainly haven't watched any soap operas. Nobody dies for real, son.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What did we last but not least as we move on? I still feel as we go into this, I love what they did with WandaVision. I love the character. I love the grief. I love everything about what they've done. And I love the fact that Elizabeth Olsen absolutely carried an extremely complicated storyline. I know people have talked about what Oscar Isaac did in Moon Knight, but I still just think that what she's done has been fantastic. Yeah. Yep. The one character we haven't spoken about in this whole film is America, the one who's around the whole thing.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
No, I just want to say, like, from an intro's perspective, I think this was a really knock it out of the park intro. Just like the perfect fit her in here. And I think the way that her and Strange interacted was really fun. The story of her trying to figure out her powers and struggling with that as she goes along until she gets to a point where she realizes that her powers were always sending her to the right place. And I think Strange being able to assist her in that way, doing the opposite of what Defender Strange did at the beginning of the film, I think was a great way to bring things back full circle for her. So I'm excited to see what America Chavez does, whether it's she's hanging out with Ned doing doing some sorcery at some point, or she joins up with the Young Avengers in the future. Whatever that holds, America Chavez is a character I want to be around and a character I want to see.
Do we see a Tony Stark, Peter Parker relationship there as well, budding? No,
because she's not, you know, Peter Parker's, because she has no desire to be mentored by someone. And I think that's such a fun thing. That's a fun thing to do.
Which is what Spider-Man was supposed to be, which is why I was enraged with what they did with that character. I'm like, he's a loner. I'm screaming at the TV. He's a loner. Leave him be.
Right. And well, like the other thing, too, on top of all that, not looking for a mentor. This is our first. I'm recycling this, but like this is our first young new character that has no knowledge or reverence for the Avengers.
Yes.
Yeah. Very different from the Haley Stanfield in Hawkeye. Final thoughts. Let's do a little roundtable. Final thoughts, Jake.
The Bruce Campbell cameo was great. This is the third time Bruce Campbell has beat himself up on camera for Sam Raimi. And if that's not a lifelong friendship, I don't know what is.
AC?
I'm glad that they were able to give Rachel McAdams more to do in this film than the last one. I like the part that she played and kind of getting Strange to see that see who he is, who he actually is. He always has to hold the knife. And that played a part in at the end of the story.
I really like your conversation in like all these new characters or existing ones that are growing into their own and seeing like who are the new superstars. But I got to say, if we're going to be here on the pirate ship under Dan Le Batard, I think we have to call it an MVP bar.
MVP bar.
It was a fun time. And honestly, I'm really happy that it was big and small at the same time. Give me more Sam Raimi. Give me a Sam Raimi big event, Avengers level event scene, like the way that they gave it to James Gunn in Infinity War. Like, give me some of that action because I'm going to need that back. No.
All I was going to say was I'm looking at Christine and Rachel McAdams and I'm thinking, you married a black guy. He got one sentence in the whole movie.
Ooh.
I mean, bro, you know how that goes.
He didn't even talk. He was a fanboy. I was like, are you going to introduce Stephen Strange to your fanboy husband? He got a line. I'm hoping his check is bigger than his dirty, dialogue though. On that.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Should at least
indeed.
Give him a dap scene or something.
give him
you
something.
Know Strange can't dap. You know he's going to go for like a handshake.
The cape would do it. The cape would do the dap.
Exactly. Somebody's got to, exactly. I mean, dap that brother up. He's a fan. This has been so much fun. Welcome to the pirate ship, to the Mystery Crate. We will do this again. But before we go, the MC University Pod can be found as it sounds at MC University Pod. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, SoundCloud, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts. And on the socials, fellas, where can everybody find you? Twitter handles, gentlemen. Jake.
At the Jake Christie.
Jerome.
Oh, my Twitter is at Black Dragon Roll.
And for me, at @AnthonyCanton_3.
Outstanding, boys. Thank you for this. This has been fantastic. I am looking forward, as I know you guys are all looking forward to the next time we do this at a date to be determined in the very near future. We have a mystery guest for the Mystery Crate. And we'll see you all later.
Great. What do we got going on? What do we got, Moco, this week?
All right, Montgomery and Company, we have Soledad O'Brien this Ooh. Week.
All right. Cinephile has Judd Apatow. I'm very Good proud cat. Of this interview. We had 30 minutes with him. Honestly, if you haven't checked out Cinephile in a while, this is a good episode to get back into it. We had a great conversation with Judd Apatow. Tony, what do you got?
I'm going to Hawaii.
All right.
Mike, what do you got? Anything else?
You're going to Oahu, and they got Waikiki Beach. It's overrated.
Brother,
it's just overrated. Come on. I've walked like Broly the entire Broly Waikiki Ale. Beach.
Broly, he'll
Me
be fine.
Too, and I love it.
Yeah, you going to a luau?
Maybe.
Wish Tony, how's my?
Have you ever gone to a luau?
I haven't.
I need.
Oh
money.
My god,
I
you haven't
go
even gone to Hawaii.
The pig. One.
Do you listen to my song yet? I'll just go fuck myself.
Okay.
You go to Pearl Harbor?
Sarah Marshall.
Yeah, I've gone.
Right.
Yeah. How many times?
Once.
You ever watch a movie?
Yeah.
No, you didn't.
Remember when Cuba Gooding Jr.'s on the turret? It's like
you just saw the trailer.
No, Ben Affleck's in it.
You terrible just saw movie. The trailer.
It's a terrible
no,
movie.
No, I saw it in theaters like 3 hours long.
Terrible movie.
You just.
I saw the movie.
No, this is a Mina Kimes bit. You haven't watched it.
No, I did. I saw the movie. I promise. I seen
no.
the movie.
What's the main storyline? If you dare say the war, you're wrong.
It's always about love.
No.
It's always just, about love.
A love story
Tony
in the
just
middle
hit
of a war.
Right when you asked him that, he went.
Yeah.
It's the mozzarella stick I had earlier. I think there's a little greased on my throat. It's always about love, though.
Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. What's the love triangle
stupid.
In this film?
Well, obviously, it's Ben Affleck, right?
Uh-huh.
What's my
that guy? Your guy?
No, my guy's the other one. But my girl, what's her name?
Oh, your girl,
Naomi. What?
No.
You. I know. He knows it. Yeah. We were talking about earlier.
Her. Two, right? And then
you're talking about Kate Beckinsale, right?
No, KB? not her.
You're not talking about
no,
Kate
no,
Beckinsale?
No. Another one.
You should be talking about Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah. No, I don't think so.
Pretty sure you should be talking about Kate Beckinsale.
Feels like
she
a
was
trap.
In that movie.
It feels like a trap.
Though. It wasn't.
Cuba Gooding Jr. is a cook.
You didn't see it.
But he's a cook.
Of course, he's a cook.
He's
a goddamn cook.
He's a cook, right?
Yeah, and he surprises everyone when he saves the day and shoots down all these.
Wow.
The Japanese fighter pilots. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
See the movie.
It was Kate Beckinsale.
I don't know about that.
It was Kate Beckinsale.
Look it up. Somebody look it up.
Where's Lewis?
This is your first time in Hawaii.
Are you with Lewis on this?
No, it's definitely not my first time in Hawaii.
It is your first time.
It's definitely not my first time in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
You staying in that Jennifer Aniston Adam Sandler resort?
No, I wish though.
Yeah.
The place is nice.
You staying in the Forgetting Sarah Marshall resort?
No, not either.
Okay, goodbye.